No. Make sure our volume is up too. Yeah, I wanted to use...
Speak louder or what?
No, actually speak at your natural, normal volume. I wanted to use this room because we had a couple of different locations, right? We used the classroom, which was had a lot of... I don't know if it was an air conditioner or what, the background noise. And then the last person I talked to was Josie, and we used the sunroom, and that was just terrible for street noise and stuff like that. So,
this is pretty good. Yeah.
So, yeah, so I start with just questions about your background, and you can talk to me a little bit about, say, where your parents came from, how they met. If you know how or why you were given the name you were given.
None of those questions I can actually answer directly. I can say indirectly, starting back from when my parents met. I really don't know that much information about how they met. I just know from the area that they were in, around that Gonzales, Prairie View, Prairieville area, LaPlace, those areas. She was sort of a country girl. And by me giving my name, I really don't know why she gave me Michael and any of my brothers and sisters. But that was the name that, you know, I received. I was the last one in her first group of kids that was born. And I was a baby, so she brought me to New Orleans as I was literally born in New Orleans, so they say. Mm-hmm. And I was the first one of her next group of kids. She married after that.
Mm-hmm.
And the gentleman that she married gave me his name, so I became his oldest son.
Okay.
And then he had three other sons and a daughter. So I'm the oldest of that group. Now my first group of brothers and sisters, like I said, were given away to foster parents and stuff. And I'm aware of them. We know each other and all those things. And I've met them and we, you know, very close at times. And it's a big group. Everybody knows everybody. So, you know, the second group knows about the first group and so on and so on.
Right.
Anything else? I think I covered everything so far.
My
background?
Yeah.
I'm basically from New Orleans. I grew up in New Orleans, 64 years. Went to the public schools in New Orleans. First one was Craig Elementary up in the Treme area.
Okay.
We lived there for a while and we moved around a lot. So I wound up moving to the Treme area around St. Bernard Avenue. And I was close to Clark Senior High School. I always admired the kids going there. Plus, I had a cousin or so going there. So I wanted to go there as I got older, but things changed. We moved to the Ninth Ward.
Mm-hmm.
And when we moved to the Ninth Ward, I went to elementary school. I was in third grade, going to fourth grade. We went to an elementary school called Joseph A. Harden. And it was the Ninth Ward. Almost to St. Bernard. So I wound up finishing at Harden Elementary and wound up going to Lawless Junior High School,
mm-hmm.
where from sixth grade to eighth grade, you know, played a little football and stuff, got introduced to sports. Then went to Carver Senior High School and finished from ninth to 12th grade. Developed some skills in art. I loved art all my life. And as I developed skills in art, my art teacher, who was a Xavier graduate, gave me the ability to put a portfolio together. He saw I had a lot of talent and I was very interested in art.
Mm-hmm.
So he brought me to Xavier, showed my work to the professors there. He gave me a scholarship to in art, fine arts. But me and my silly self wanted to teach all my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I told my coaches when I was at Carver Senior High School, they wouldn't have sent me to Grambling or to Southern University to play football. I said, coach, I want to teach. he looked at me kind of crazy and thought I was going, you know, bananas, but I got the scholarship to Xavier in art, crying arts. Meeting when I got there, I changed because, like I said, I wanted to teach. Mm-hmm. So I became a secondary art educator in the high schools and stuff. That made me very happy. You know, they dropped a fine art scholarship and I had to do work study, Pell Grants, and other things. And when I finished in 5 or so years, I started teaching at Clark Senior High School. So that's my love back from one go to Clark. I wound up teaching there from 78 to 84, 9th through 12th grade. 84, they moved me, like they're doing all these parents and most teachers, to an elementary school. Now, I didn't have a background in elementary, but I adapted pretty good. That was kid through 6, and I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. That was from 84 to 94. Immediately I got a request by one of my old student teachers that taught me in 9th grade art at Rivers Frederick. Mm-hmm. And he asked me that I want to be a teacher at 35, where he was retiring. He recommended me. So on that recommendation, I was moved to McDonough 35, which was a very prestigious school, blue ribbon school. Mm-hmm. I've always been blessed to have good schools that I worked at. So I worked there from 94 to 2002. Then they moved me to what was then called the Signature Schools. Mr. Amato, the superintendent, whatever he was in terms of our schools, I think he was a superintendent, had set up a school, Signature School, with culinary, pre-med, early college. So I wound up teaching at the campus that was formerly a junior high school, mm-hmm. Across from Booker T, and the school was Durham Middle School. Mm-hmm. And they wound up moving me to Delgado's campus, where I taught pre-med students who were going to college, and I taught students who were going to SUNO, mm-hmm. in early college. So I had the privilege of being sort of a non-whatever college professor, you know, and it was funny. Mm-hmm. The people, students that were going to the school that wasn't high school students thought that I was a college professor because I walked around with a tie and looking like a professor. Mm-hmm. And some of them asked me, can I get in your class? I said, no, you can't get in my class because I'm a high school student teacher. After that, I came back from the storm. And I wound up teaching at St. Aug. Now, originally, I wanted to teach at St. Aug when I got out of Xavier, but they didn't pay enough because I had a family. And so I went to public school. So one of the principals at St. Aug needed to start an art program, so he asked me to come there, set it up, and for 2 years I taught there. Mm-hmm. And my son went there also because when we came back, we didn't want to send him back to 35. The school had changed. Mm-hmm. And so I put him in St. Aug, and I paid part of his tuition, and I paid the rest. You know? By being a teacher, they give you a little discount. Mm-hmm. When he finished, I was moved to across the river. I found a job at Algiers Charter School System, which was elementary again, K through 8. I loved that school. That school was also another good school. The school was very nice, and the Burma Elementary. And it was a very good school, and that's when, around 2010, I retired. And I'm now just working at Superdome part-time and drawing my retirement. And that's going to end in a little while because I make 65, and I'll probably be applying for my Social Security and, you know, moving out of the work sector. I'll finally get a full retirement, mm-hmm. and I'll finally be, you know, able to relax and enjoy the fruits of all my work and sell more of my artwork. I've been doing artwork since I came back from the storm, and I have a pretty impressive amount of artwork that I'm trying to sell and show and do things, and I'm starting to see that I want to do a show here and later told me I could do it, but that was a little problem here, so I'm waiting on them to tell me what mm-hmm. they're going to do. But in the meantime, I'm working towards doing shows at festivals, Gentilly Fest, working towards doing the Essence, working towards doing the Jazz Fest. Mm. But you need a lot of money to set up the booths and stuff. And each one is progressively higher in terms of what you have to come up with to set up things. Then you have to have things printed. You have to be able to do work at these shows. You have to be available to stand there and talk to people and, you know, all kinds of things. So I have to get more things together. So that's my plans for the future.
Okay.
And that's about it for right now. You guys want to know?
Yeah, so let's go back a little bit. I feel like you've given me a nice broad overview, but of course I'm interested in the in as many specifics as I can get at. So do you remember a little a bit about the, say, the home that you lived in the Treme area when y'all moved there? Or can you tell me what it was like to grow up in that neighborhood?
Back then, and let's say the 60s, I guess we'd say early 60s. We lived in areas that were more family oriented. We could play outside in the yard and stuff. It was fun growing up in those neighborhoods. You could walk to school. We lived in a house, shotgun houses most of the time, mm-hmm. and either half of a house or a whole house. And it was very home. Well, we're very close. My brother and sister were like steps, you know? So
right.
A few years apart and so on. So I was the oldest one. So we had fun playing together and stuff in the outside and just enjoying life. I was sort of the big brother, you know? And they all, you know, followed me or did, you know, used me as an example. But that's the Treme area. I can think about the Ninth Ward, we were even closer because we all, like I said, went to school around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So I went first, and they were in lower grades, and then, you know, it progressed that way. If somebody knew me, they knew my brothers, they knew my sisters and stuff, that kind of family thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun growing up back in those times, peaceful, quiet. I was mostly the person who, the oldest child who watched the kids when mom went out and dad went out to get groceries or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and whatever they did, I got charged for it, you know. So,
right.
So when they got a chastising or whatever, I wound up getting it too because of what they did.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny, but you grow and you learn and you understand that, you know, when they put responsibilities on you, the parents put responsibilities on you, that you need to make sure that you watch your siblings. Mm-hmm. And make sure they don't do anything. Wasn't too bad. They didn't do too many things that I wound up regretting.
Good. So was it I'm guessing it was predominantly black?
Oh, yeah. Every area I lived in was predominantly black. Especially that St. Bernard area, that area that I talked about, Durbin and whatever. We hardly ever had, I can't remember. I guess you could say if you went towards Esplanade, you would find the whites in that area, but most of the predominant black in the areas I lived in.
Mm-hmm.
You
know. And your parents, what did they do for a living?
My mom was a general housekeeper. Later on in life, she went out and she did some work at what was then SG Crest at on Canal Street. And she was a cook, shout out to cook and stuff. After that, she worked in people's houses, white people houses, in terms of around the Franklin area, Franklin Avenue area. So go out and clean up the house, take care of the older gentleman that lived in the house, and she was there. Mr. Foundberry or something. And they were very appreciative. They gave her a few things like clothes and stuff that they didn't want.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was a big guy, she would bring on some clothes that I could wear sometime, mm-hmm. and I would wear them. And they were, you know, back then what you call expensive things. So, you know, when some of them threw their stuff away, it was just to buy a new fashion. And like sandal belt pants, those things used to cost a lot when I remember getting older and seeing them. Sandal belt was a classy tight trouser mm-hmm. that costs a lot of money. So when they give them away, they were still pretty good. Mm-hmm. I could say that also that she worked at a nursery later on, where she once again cooked and took care of little kids that were in there. You know, became like the unofficial grandmother. Last job she worked at was a school off of, a Catholic school off of Canal Street, St. Joseph, St. Michael's or something. And she became like unofficial grandmother and cook and all those other things. She did cook there. Then she moved to Baton Rouge after the storm. So that was a trip coming from Baton Rouge to here. Mm-hmm. But she finally gave it up, and now she's in Baton Rouge living and relaxing mm-hmm. and doing nothing, you know, but she deserved it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And your dad?
Oh, okay, stepdad.
Stepdad.
He was a truck driver in the French quarters, in the French market area. He used to deliver food to stores like Swagman's, produce, and a short, you know, short delivery runs and stuff. You know, they order like tomatoes or apples or something. He'd bring them and, you know, drop them off at the supermarket and stuff, and then move to the next one and stuff. Mm-hmm. That's what he did most of his life. And he had a little side, what we call hustles.
Right.
Where at night he would go out, and at that time they didn't have, what's called that, garbage disposals or whatever. So he'd take the pasteboard boxes or the cardboard boxes, and he'd bring them to the junk, the dump, I guess you'd say dump sites mm-hmm. in St. Bernard, and he threw that away. And that was his whole thing, those two jobs. You know? But he made a pretty good salary.
Okay. And how many kids were there?
Five in the second group.
Okay, five. Mm-hmm. All right. And did you have a sense that you guys were comfortable? Did you ever want for anything?
Oh, no, we didn't want for anything. We had comforts of, like I said, food. We always had, you know, three squares and all the healthy foods and stuff. You know, none mm-hmm. of the junk food that kids get now. We right. had lots of fruits and vegetables. We had regular meals cooked all the time. Mm-hmm. Fast food, I didn't know what that was. You know? Right. McDonald's, Burger King, and all the other things to hear about them. But we ate mostly, you know, the real foods and whatever. Mm-hmm. And we all were hardly ever sick, hardly have ever had any problems. And we wanted a snack, we had a lot of stuff there mm-hmm. In terms of fruits and stuff. And then she would make, my mom would make frozen cups, what we call zip cups. We got different names from across the city. Mm-hmm. Frozen cups, she would take Kool-Aid, and cold drink was another thing we didn't have too much of, because she used to make root beer from root beer extract. Mm-hmm. She would make Kool-Aid. I promised myself when I grew up, I would never drink root beer extract with lemon juice up in it. I'm mm-hmm. talking about squeezing lemon. I promised myself I wouldn't drink too much Kool-Aid, because I was sick of Kool-Aid
right.
all through my life. But the other side was getting cold drinks, which was bad, so I had to cut them out too, you know. So, but just growing up, we were very happy kids. We didn't have any problems. Then all the watermelon you eat, all the sugar cane. Mm-hmm. Break it, you know, cut it, whatever, eat it. All the other things that, you know, you could find that people don't even know about or haven't heard about, mm-hmm. like kumquats and stuff like that. Some people don't even know what that is, you know. Mm-hmm. Plantains and stuff like that. Look like a banana, but not a banana. Mm-hmm. I can name a lot of things that we had that people now, if you showed it to them or if you told them about it, they wouldn't believe it, you know, because the French Quarter mm-hmm. has changed and you don't find those things here too much. Mm-hmm. But we were very happy, and I remember chiclets. When she went to Swedish, she'd get us certain little things like chiclets, mm-hmm. little bitty gum type things, and other cracker jacks or something like that, you know, mm-hmm. Little simple things, yeah.
Okay. And you mentioned that you met your first group, like, you know, your first group of brothers and sisters.
Yeah, I mean,
did you meet your dad?
Yes. Later in life, when I was around 30s, I met him. I was teaching at Clark Senior High School. Mm. And one of my cousins came over because they heard, I don't know from who or whatever, they heard that their relative had a son. So they came over to the school and said, look, I know your daddy, and I know your other sister. Mm-hmm. So I said, who is my dad? Because I never knew him, I was wanting to know him. Mm-hmm. So they showed me a sister that I didn't know about. Her name was Gwen also, because I had my baby sister, mm-hmm. his name Gwen. So I have an older sister named Gwen, imagine that. Mm-hmm. So she took me out to Donaldsonville, and I met him, a gentleman, he remembered me as being somebody that was born when he was with my mom for mm-hmm. a time. But that's the way they operated, you know, that's the way they, it was relationships, it wasn't marriage.
Right.
So when I met him, I saw him as what I was gonna look like at 56. You know, tall, sort of a little bit of gray, right. Slim like I am now, tall, he was tall. Mm-hmm. And I went back and told my mom, I said, Mom, I said, look, I met this gentleman named Marshall Stewart. So she tells me, she get quiet, you know, we were talking on the phone.
Right.
So she get quiet. So then I knew I had her, you know, because I always wanted to know. But she was telling me somebody else was my dad. And that wasn't my dad. She was sending me out there to see him a lot. Mm-hmm. And his name was Richard Russell. And ironically, that's the name that I had on my records in school before she married this gentleman and gave me Bridges. So I mm-hmm. moved up the ladder in terms of last name. Right. But for a long time, I was Russell. So when I told her I met Marshall Stewart, she got quiet. I said, well, Mom, why didn't you tell me that was my dad? I wasn't mad, I just wanted to know.
Right.
She gets quiet and she tells me, I didn't want you to turn out like him. I'm saying, wait a minute, I'm a college grad. I'm right. teaching. How can I ever turn out to be like him? Because he was a sharecropper, you know, picking crops and stuff.
Right.
In people's fields and stuff out there. I'm saying to myself, wait, how can I ever turn out to be like him? I've been in college and everything else, I'm teaching. I can never be like him because I'm not in that area.
Right.
So I say, okay, Ma, you know, like that. And I didn't hold it against her, but that's her thinking or whatever, you know, but I was her thinking, I guess, you know, but I was just like surprised. She didn't say it wasn't, so it was, you know,
right.
my dad. I was just laughing. I said, well, things you find out if you search long enough or you wait long enough or you pray for it long enough, you'll find out. And I always say, if a person doesn't know his dad or her dad or her mom, they need to be told who that person is, because that's something that a child needs to have that connection with. Mm-hmm. It didn't hurt me, but I finally got clarity on who my other parent was, you know. Mm-hmm. And he passed at 56, and I passed that stage, but he died of smoking, and I said I never smoked.
Right.
I hardly drink, because my stepdad died of drinking, so I have two things that I really don't like, you know.
Yeah.
But I like both of the gentlemen, both of them with, I consider having two dads, because they were the type of people that gave me certain values that made me the man that I am. The stepdad gave me the work values that I have now. I'm a hard worker even today, and I don't let anything stop me from doing what I have to do. The other gentleman, I met him, and I liked him because he was very friendly. My dad, and he was very friendly. Oh, come here, this is my son. He just got out there and met him. Mm-hmm. Look, come here, this is my son, this is my son. Wait, you just met me a few minutes ago, but I'm your son, you know.
Right.
You know, but he was glad to know that I was here. He had several other kids too, you know.
Right.
Still making kids, you know, before he passed. I was laughing. I was laughing. I said, wow, I'm glad I'm not like that.
Okay.
You know, but he was a good man, though, you know. But I really enjoyed meeting or having both of those gentlemen in my life for the times that I had them. I only knew my dad for about 3 years. And like I said, it was a good time. I was going out there on Father's Day.
Okay.
And he passed from smoking, like I said. And it sort of shocked me because I had the little Father's Day card ready. I was ironing my clothes and they called me and told me, well, look, your dad passed. You know, I said, oh, I said, for what? Smoking. So that locked that in for me. No smoking. Never. Mm-hmm. Excuse me.
Okay. So you mentioned having your own family. So again, we need to backtrack just a little bit. How and when did you meet your wife, ex-wife?
Oh, I was 26 and mm-hmm. I was going to Xavier University, and I was she was in art. A little bit higher in the school than I was. I was like a sophomore and she was like a junior slash senior. Mm-hmm. Having a little trouble getting out of that because Xavier was a little hard. Mm-hmm. And we finally met in our department when we talked for a little while, dated for a little while, heavily. And she was from uptown. That was around St. John of Arc, the Catholic area. Mm-hmm. And went by a house several times and we dated and got very close. And of course when you're dating, you know, you're gonna be developing a relationship, you're very intimate and stuff. So she became pregnant. That's the next thing. Yeah. Mm. So we talked for a while and I told her, I said, look, I wanna marry you. I was getting out of college and stuff. So I talked to her parents, told her parents I wanted to marry her. So we eventually got married in her church and I became Catholic because I was Baptist for a while. And my entire life. So that was a new experience. But being exposed to Xavier and getting the Catholic values from Xavier helped me with that, you know, so it wasn't a major transition.
Right.
I adjusted very well and became, Catholic in terms of that. And we were good, a couple of months apart. She's May and I'm February. And we had two daughters. Andrea is the one that we had first, you know, and then Kelly came along 6 years apart. Mm-hmm. And we stayed married for 14 years. And then she decided that she wanted to find herself. And I can understand that now because she lived with her mom most of her life. She was a baby girl. Mm-hmm. And I came along and took her out of that into another situation that was like being tied down again, but not really being exposed to the outside world. All mm-hmm. she ever knew was being in the house with her parents and stuff and never went any farther than that. So
right.
I could understand that. And she decided that she didn't want to stay married. I pursued her for 3 years after that and she didn't want to stay married. So I sort of moved on, you know, had taken it a little hard, but I got over it. Mm-hmm. Then I met my second wife, who we had a son by, and married her for 19 years. And went through the storm and everything else, got a house and everything down the east. So when she asked for a divorce in 2010, I said, wait, not again, you know. But I was laughing, I said, well, you know, let it go. My son finished high school and stuff, went off to college. Mm-hmm. We stayed friends for a long time. Then all of a sudden, like in 2016, 10 years, well, yes, no, six years later, she says she, ready to fill out the divorce papers and stuff, and she sent me the divorce papers. I was laughing because we were very good friends and we were still dating. I could go to the house and wash clothes, clean the vehicle, had access keys and all that. Mm-hmm. And she told me that. I said, wait, you know, to myself, I didn't question it. I said, okay, I'll bring the keys over. You know, she said, don't fight it. I said, okay, I won't fight it. You know, so I'm presently single for a while. Finally moving on and, you know, happy and stuff like that. I'm better, you know, and have someone that I'm talking to now who's more, you know, like, we're like in terms of things, more compatible, you know. Mm-hmm. And two teachers, ex-teachers, mm-hmm. Same years and all that. She would finish the sentence or something, you know, it's a better situation. I think that I have a better relationship and I'm closer and it's more suited to me and it's a we thing, not an I thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I finally get exactly what I wanted, all the years that I wanted, because from 26 up till now, all I ever wanted to be was married, all I ever wanted to be was a family person. I don't want to date. I don't even like that dating. I don't even know what that dating stuff is. Because half my life, I've been married, you know, and right. I'm more of a family man. I'm more of a man that likes a stable relationship. Mm-hmm. I don't want to date at all. And dating scares me.
Right.
Because people out here aren't the same. Guys aren't, women aren't. They're seeking different things, and this is crazy. Cell phones and texting and all them other things. Yes, I use them, but you can say a lot of things in texting, but you can't really feel or whatever what a person is thinking with a text or something. I like to talk. Mm-hmm. I like to, be exposed to the physical, and you can tell things by talking to a person and seeing how they react. Mm-hmm. And view expressions and stuff. I'm more of an emotional type guy,
Right.
So that kind of stuff is what I'm looking for, and I'm getting that. And I tell people, you stimulate my mind, you got me. Because first of all, you got my attention, you got my curiosity, mm-hmm. and that's what I look for in a lady, a person that can stimulate my mind as well as, my body or whatever. But I want the mental stimulation first.
Right.
And that's what I look for first. Now all other stuff gonna come down the road. Mm-hmm. But I like to make people smile. I like to be a happy person. I like to give. Mm-hmm. I'm a caring person and those type of things.
Okay. Any grandkids?
Oh yeah, 3 boys. Stepdad again, my oldest daughter, and they're all doing well. One is getting out of high school this year, and I have one in elementary, and one's a little cutie pie, about three, 4 years, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that when you relocated for Katrina, where did you end up going?
Oh, praise Dallas. Then Houston, stayed in Houston for 6 to 8 months.
Okay.
Came back, worked on the house, then moved back here into the east. Got the house back up and all that. That was a lot of work. I used some of my artistic skills to do tile floors, put them down, take them mm-hmm. up, paint the walls. I did some work on the house. Put in stainless steel stuff, mm-hmm. do the gas work on the pipes and stuff before they came in to connect everything. Got compliments from Susan Waterboard and whatever. Oh, you did a good job. And people used to pay a contractor and stuff. I just give my hands, mm-hmm. put granite tops and the thing. The house was brick, so all I had to do was gut it down to the studs, mm-hmm. which I did. And then come in there and take care of all the stuff and put it back together, but it's better. It was valued at a certain price, a low price, about $50,000 when we bought it. And now it's valued like $150,000. Big double driveway and all them other things, mm-hmm. It's just a fantastic place. But she has it. Mm-hmm. I'm not in it.
Well, did you work at all while you were in Houston? How did you guys?
No, tell you what happened. She was coming back and forth to New Orleans to work.
Okay.
And I was privileged to, didn't have to, because I had money coming in from Orleans Parish school system, so to say. They were paying us a little stipend. Plus, Houston gave us food stamps or whatever, So it wasn't really a necessary thing for me to work. She worked for the state and as a social worker, so it was pretty much easy. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't there too long, 6 to 8 months, it wasn't that bad. Came back here, like I said, got a job in all these parents, and resumed through the recovery school system. I was a teacher for 34 years, and it was, didn't have too many problems.
Did all the kids come back here, or are they based in other places?
My oldest daughter wound up being moved to Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
And ironically, she lived in an apartment in the east. When she went to Atlanta, she got a big house, mm-hmm. her and her husband, and it shocked me because you can move from an apartment and you couldn't get a house here, but when you go to Atlanta, you got a house, And I remember what she was doing, but he was a bus driver, so the salary that they were that he was making was enough to get them a house. Mm-hmm. Ironically, they divorced and the house went south, mm-hmm. and she moved back to New Orleans. She now lives in the east. My middle child, my daughter, she lives in Baker, Louisiana. She's been married for about 3 or so years. She married a nice young man, and he bought her a house, second year of the marriage, and he works in a plant and stuff, a good country boy, and gives her anything she wants. They have no children, they have two dogs, and they're very close, like children, and they travel and do stuff, and she, like I said, she doesn't want anything. My son is working on his master's now, so he's in Texas, and he's working on that in psychology, and that's about it.
Okay. Well, what about you in terms of traveling or other places that you lived? Have you been out of the country?
No, I can answer that.
Okay.
I've traveled, you know, different parts of the country. Texas, Mississippi, Georgia, Alabama, through teaching and stuff. And I'm planning on traveling more when, you know, when next year is going to be the year, because I'll be not working, I can travel more and do more things. But I travel somewhat around the country. I want to go to other places in the country, but so that's the plan.
Okay. All right. And then it's come up a little bit in my interviews, especially with people who attended Xavier during some of the student demonstrations and stuff like that. I mean, do you...
Go ahead.
How strong is your recollection of any of that stuff? How affected or how close to civil rights activism?
Oh, you really touched on it. First of all, the time I was going to Xavier, we had this thing about getting involved in the Vietnam War. And I was the age that you could be drafted and you had to sign up for the draft. I was opposed to going to Vietnam and war situation, because I didn't believe we should be over there in another country, in other people's business, and I believe it was more than that. But my thing, why did I leave my country to go fight somebody else's war? I'm glad I wasn't drafted. We had other things before that. We had Black Panthers and stuff in the Ninth Ward. We had, you know, racial tensions as I was growing up, but I was always pro Black in terms of being a person that was about Black rights and stuff, you know. I didn't like segregation. Well, I didn't like that. I didn't like things that Black were put down for, a lot of things, you know. And I've always been a strong proponent to the Black identity. Trying to think of what I said back then, it was strong, but today it's not that strong. Things that pertain to Blacks being considered better people, not just down at the bottom and stuff. I've always been that type of person. I try to instill that in kids that I taught, the Black pride, the Black image, like Angela Davis, and I'm trying to think of other people that have long passed. Thurgood Marshall, I'm thinking about Martin Luther King, we went through that too. That was in 68 when he was shot and killed, assassinated. And I was very strong about that, civil rights and stuff. I've always had that feeling. I used to teach that even when I was teaching in school. Things that would make a Black child feel proud about themselves, and I've always had that instilled in me, and I am that way today. I look at a lot of things on TV today, I said, it's nothing but history repeating itself. But we, most of us, as Black individuals, Black Americans, have kind of gotten away from, you know, certain things. We see it, but we don't see it. Like, we have blinders on. And I look at it and I say, just don't realize it's the same thing, but a different guise. And some of us older people are more conscious of it. Some young people feel a little bit all right, you know, about being involved in it. But you can see it. It's not the same feeling that we had. Some of us were very strong about it back then. A lot of kids today are like kids being shot, like Trevon Williams and stuff, you know, unarmed or whatever. And I call it getting away with it, so they think they're getting away with it. But it's the same thing. A lot of Blacks were killed back when we were coming up, and it was swept under the rug. But I'm very strong about things that pertain to Blacks. And it just bothers me sometimes that I used to teach Black history, and Black History Month, I was really pushing it. And now today, if you go to a school, you're not gonna see too much being said about Black history, you know, and nothing being done around Black history. And I see it, man. It started dropping off when I was getting out of teaching. They stopped having Black history programs. They stopped, you know, emphasizing Blacks, the rights and things, the accomplishments that they did and stuff. And I saw it, you know, and nothing was said about it, you know, but okay, you know, but that's why times change. You know? Mm-hmm. Even the shows on TV, you see it yourself. You don't have too many Black History Month programs or little going back to things like Roots or whatever. You see it, you know, it's swept under the rug, you know. Yeah, but that's the way it is. That's the kind of time. But I try to teach everybody that I see, kids or whatever, little things, even today, about Black history or whatever. And I said, did you know that this was invented by a Black man, like the cotton gin or something like that? And let them know, wait, you said a Black did that? Yeah, a Black did that. You know, the traffic light, the simple traffic light, a Black man invented that, you know, but you never hear it. You know? Mm-hmm. The refrigerated things on MyStar, a Black man did that. You know, but you know, people don't understand. We have a rich culture and a rich heritage. We came from Africa and stuff, but we had a heritage before that, and you can't forget that. You can't discount that, you can't sweep it under the rug. That's where we came from, you know? Mm-hmm. And you gotta remember that you're descendants of kings and queens. You know? You're not just the average little person, you know? Mm-hmm. You have a lot of talent, you have a lot of skill. Most of us are very good with our hands. We could see something and do it. We don't have to go to school, but we should go to school to obtain the proper knowledge, but most of us could do things with our hand quicker than we could do stuff with writing and, you know, doing things. College helps. I tell kids, some of us are not made for college, some of us are not college material, but you can do other things. Mm-hmm. I don't discourage them about going to college. I tell them if you want to try another avenue, like junior college before you go to college, then go to college if you feel comfortable with it, do it. But there's beauty schools, there's schools for nurses, there's, you know, different things you could do. Okay. That, you know. But I don't discourage a kid, I try to give them hope and let them see that they can become something.
Well, the last couple of questions I have are more specifically just about the semester of Wisdom of the Elders. What made you want to take the class? Would you want to participate in another semester?
Sure. Sure. Let me answer that.
And did you have anything that you either didn't enjoy or that you felt we could do better next time?
I never had anything that I didn't enjoy. Mm-hmm. I would participate in the game and talk to a new group and try to inspire them to put all their efforts into trying to find out something or sharing something with their families that we have to offer. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of us don't share stuff, and some things get lost through time when we pass. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that myself when I'm at a slight young old age. I'm in the middle. Because when I talk to some older people, oh, you're still young. When I talk to some younger people, they tell me, you a little old, so I'm in the middle. I can't fit right in the pocket, but you know, I don't worry about that. Mm-hmm. I believe in sharing my knowledge before I pass. And I told my son, I said, you know, one day, I said, son, you know, we have Indian blood in us. And my mama told me that, so I'm sharing something. He said, I didn't know that, Dad. And I said, yeah, you do, you know. So that's something that we should do and share with our kids and our grandkids before we pass, because they don't know, you know. And if they know, then that make them a better person and have a connection with their families, their ancestors or whatever, any way you want to put it. Yeah.
But, and when you, since you were one of my three who came to orientation.
I tried.
Right. So, what was the major draw for you? Why did you want to participate in the program?
I wanted to find out about my family history. I wanted to be a part of sharing that knowledge. This is roughly the second book that I have been in contact with another student who went to Southeastern, wrote a book about 10 black artists. It's in the libraries, I'm told, it's a reference book now. And I was privileged to be one of the younger artists in the book. John Scott, who taught at Xavier, Lloyd Bennett, Jack Jordan, those people. I was in the company of those people, and I wasn't even an artist, and I was just a little Rudy Poo artist. And I was privileged to be in that group, and the lady was interviewing me. I didn't know the depth, I didn't know the value, the historical reference. It's a reference book too. And I look back on that as the early beginning of what I was going to be exposed to and what I was going to be a part of, like this. I'm going to be a part of something that you're doing, and it's a good thing. And I felt interested in that because I would, like I said, be sharing knowledge and learning something about myself, my family and stuff. Oh, that's good. That's good to know. And I'm not a closed-minded person. I'm always open, innovative, creative, curious person. That's why I attended all the classes I could. That's why I was interested, because once again, it was stimulating my mind. And once you stimulate my mind, you got me. If I didn't go or come, it was because of personal things that happened, but I tried to make it here all the times I could. I would get upset when I couldn't make it, you know? So, look, I'd rather do this than that.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the